On today's episode of the Thriving in Ministry podcast, we're talking about the five challenges facing lead pastors today. I'm Kyle Willis, Talenton Church Services, and as always,
Phil Blunt,
Matt Dotson.
Hey, I like this music,
Phil. You like this? It's really got a groove.
It's pumped up.
Yeah, it's kind of a, you know what makes me think of, as an old guy, the Isley Brothers. Makes me think of funk. It is kind of funkadelic.
Sure. Was that disco?
No.
No?
Disco, I suppose disco is a derivative of funk to an extent. No, funk is much cooler than disco. But I see the connection.
It does make me want to dance a little bit.
It makes me dance.
Is a great segue into what we're talking about today.
Yeah.
The five challenges facing lead pastors. Full disclaimer, none of the three of us are lead pastors, but we spend a lot of time with pastors and just got off a four-hour conference call to do this podcast. So...
Yeah, with pastors.
With multiple pastors. Great guys. If any of them hear this, I won't call them out. But that was an exhausting phone call, which coincidentally is the number one challenge facing lead pastors that we're going to talk about is exhaustion. That's a little teaser there at the front end. But pastors, church leaders, if you're joining here, if you're joining us on the Thriving in Ministry podcast, we want you to be encouraged to create margin for ministry. And we do that through Talenton Church Services, really coming around churches, pastors, and supporting them, their vision, their mission, help keeping them focused with everything from accounting to media to facilities. And so we are on your team. We want to be a part of your team, but this is not a commercial. And we usually start off with just a little bit of fun. I think I need some of the music back, Phil. Can we run it back for... our segment. Before we do that, we always have a jingle, actually.
A jingle, which is
Over Under. Boom, there it was. Oh, see, the music is back. The topic for this week's Over Under is fast food. Fast food. Yeah.
Love me some fast food.
Phil, why don't you start? Give us a restaurant that was in quotations.
Yeah, restaurant.
Give it a rating, and Matt and I will determine whether it's too high or
fast
too low.
Fast food establishments, and I'm going to say that I primarily frequent, and I try to do it as little as possible, frequent fast food restaurants at breakfast time.
Yeah.
And the number one fast food breakfast in the world.
There's no debate here.
No debate.
No debate whatsoever. Carl's Jr.
Oh, okay.
Sausage, egg, and cheese, biscuits. Actually, it's not even on the menu. You've got to add the cheese. Oh my gosh.
No, I'm not going to say trash. Carl's Jr.'s got a solid biscuit.
All right, so I'm giving it a 10. And you guys both say under, right?
Yeah,
or you say I'm under. You're going under that.
You're way over. And I don't know what an appropriate rating is, because in full transparency, I don't think I've had Carl's Jr. in a really long time.
You can't rate it.
Okay, fine. Maybe I'm in
A. The biscuit has so much butter. It's so bad for you.
Carl's Jr.'s biscuits are, they really are one of the top notch biscuits.
They can't be better than Whataburger.
Yeah, they are. They are. They are. 100% they are.
100% better than Brahms.
Yep. Well, you're over.
Sure.
Yeah, he is over.
I'll stay on the breakfast theme. I'll go McDonald's. Was going to be my what I thought you were going to say there, Phil, and I'm really excited about it. That's my go-to more than once a week, probably. Get a little iced coffee, but in the app you can get sausage biscuit. You can
get that two
else.
For the price of
two
one.
Two for the price of one. $1.50 special. Whatever. I mean, I know all the deals, but I'm going a 9, and the only reason I'm not going a 10, actually, I'll go an 8. I'll knock them down 2 pegs because, frankly, it's so good that I eat there more than I should.
Yeah.
So it's an 8. McDonald's.
You're rating it down because of your lack of self-control.
Yes.
I'm gonna agree with your rating. McDonald's has a solid breakfast. That 2 for the price of 1? Variety is the spice of life.
Okay. 8. Matt agreed. Phil?
Yeah. You're over just simply because... I will qualify this. My rating on Carl's Jr. You have to get the right one. I mean, because they're not all the same. Because they're doing this by hand. They're not doing it It's not like McDonald's where it's always exactly the same every time you get it. So I'm going to rate McDonald's pretty high out of 7. And I will admit, that $1.50 breakfast sandwich has been my breakfast way too many times.
I like it. Mm-hmm. All right. I was close.
So we're all pretty close.
Matt, you want to continue on with breakfast?
Yeah. So with breakfast, I mean, I do like Carl's Jr.'s biscuits. I do like the 2-for-1 deal at McDonald's. Mm-hmm. But if I get a choice and time is not an option, I'm going to Whataburger and I'm going to get that chorizo taquito with cheese.
Mm, I haven't tried that
one. Oh my.
Not the honey biscuit?
Nope. Not the honey butter chicken biscuit? Nope.
I can't do chicken for breakfast.
But the chorizo taquito with cheese? Wow. It's lights out.
I can't talk specifically to the chorizo taquito. But what's your rating?
Oh, it's a 10. Oh,
I'll go below. That's what over under has turned into is just picking our favorite things. Phil,
I don't know. I've never had it. I will say that Whataburger breakfast, when I have had it, has been
solid.
Good, solid.
Really good.
It ain't Carl's Jr., but I'd give it probably over.
I had a feeling Matt was going to go Whataburger.
Yeah, it's pretty popular.
He's a fan.
Yeah, he's a fan. All right. Well, this has been Over Under.
There you go. All right.
Yeah.
So we're going to move on to what someone hopefully really cares about. By the way, I don't know if anybody has emailed us, but if you haven't, email us at phil@talentonservices.com and we can send you out a mug if we still got some left. But hey, we are talking about 5 challenges that are facing lead pastors today. And I gave a little bit of a teaser, but the first one is exhausted pastors. This was from a Lifeway research study, and it's a little bit dated, but in 2021, they said 63% of clergy said they had never considered leaving pastoral ministry, but by 2023, that percentage fell to 49%. And so what that means is, the thought of people leaving the ministry is higher than probably ever. Over the last several years, it has shifted. And what I don't know, they cite exhaustion in this article, whether it is attributed to, COVID or disagreements or whatever. But I actually think it's probably a combination of just opportunity, but then also that the pastoral age, the median age of pastors has increased over the years. It has not stayed at a relatively low age, 30s, 40s, 50s. That number has creeped up significantly over the last 10 years. And so I think that is partially why this article is saying more people are considering leaving the ministry. But exhaustion, guys, talk about that. You guys have both been on staff at churches. Is exhaustion a real thing from staff or lead pastors?
Yeah, I would say, it's definitely a real thing. And I thought at first you were saying that 63% considered leaving ministry, but it's still, once you get down to, I'm looking at the paragraph you saw, that so more than half.
Right.
I mean, I've seen it. And I think a lot of the time it's just the pressure of being on spiritually all the time. It's that what I hear people say is it's a lot to just be the example for everyone all the time. And if they haven't found ways to be to have friends that they can just talk to and just be friends and just be a guy, or a girl, if you're a woman in a ministry position, depending on your stance on that, but just be a person and just be able to let down, then I've seen that a lot. Maybe also, I think a couple of our friends that we've known that have had church starts, I'm thinking of a mutual friend that you went to his church for a while, and he had to do everything because he was starting that church. Yeah. And I've certainly watched, I've served church starts and watched that happen as well.
Yeah, especially church planting. You know, not only are you inviting people to come, but you're also, you know, painting the worship space. You're planning everything. You're recruiting volunteers. In this season, where we're between Christmas and Easter, I think maybe a little bit of a lull, but I certainly think that everybody feels the pressure as Easter is, I don't know, 4 or 5 weeks away.
It's bearing down.
It's going to be here before we know it.
Yeah, it's our early Easter this year.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy. Matt, exhaustion. I know I'm going to throw a little bit of a curveball, but physical exhaustion. One thing that our listeners may not know because of our discussion on Whataburger and McDonald's breakfast, you used to be an endurance athlete.
Back in the day.
Back in the day. What does exhaustion feel like physically
at versus
that level? At that level.
At that level? Yeah, I mean, you know, one of the things that you always would say is you don't train to like run the race, you train to recover from the race. Mm. So you know, anybody can go out and run a marathon. Anyone can go out and do an Ironman and do all that. And you literally can, you can walk in and do it that day. But the real thing is, hey, I want to be able to function tomorrow, the next day, and the day after that.
Phil, do you have a notable quotable jingle? I think we hit it right out of the park today, Matt. Phil, re-say that.
What?
Which is you don't train for the race, the event.
You don't train for
the recovery.
It's the recovery after that you want. Mm. You want to be able to come off that race and celebrate your victory, celebrate what just happened, and go on with your life. And that's really what you are training for, is the recovery.
That's so good.
Yeah. And this has been Notable Quotables.
Yeah. No, that was, hey, I did not know you were going to say that. That was a really good start to this. And I think as we record this on a Monday morning where pastors have that Monday morning slump, they got all their energy out on Sunday from being on, as Phil would say, you know, being able to recover faster, I think is a sign of proper balance.
But conditioning.
Yeah. When we were talking about exhaustion, and as Dace and I used to do this podcast for a number of years together, we wanted to avoid burnout. That was one of our goals in doing it. And so we weren't just focused on the physical aspect, although I think when we talk about exhaustion, that's what most people think. We're also talking about the spiritual, we're talking about the mental, maybe even emotional exhaustion that can come from ministry. And so, pastor, church leader, if you are in that spot, and this is our number one of five, but if you feel like you are exhausted, I would kick it back to what Phil said, which is just talk to someone, get a friend. Frankly, maybe not even someone in ministry. I know it's maybe easy or slick to say, hey, I'm going to call my pastor buddy and get some encouragement. But I think that encouragement can come from the secular world. It can come from just having a nice coffee or a nice drink, whatever your drink of choice is, with someone from you grew up with, right? Your neighbor.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think that time and just recovery in that moment of not having to be on could be really, really beneficial. So number one, exhaustion.
Yeah.
That's one of the challenges that lead pastors are facing. The second one on our list was, and actually we took this from an article, Anthony Hilder. I'm not sure I'm saying his name correctly, but we'll put it in the show notes if you want it. But number two was just a culture that works against the vision. So this could be the culture of the church. This could be your congregation. This could, frankly, be the culture of the denomination that you're a part of. And that four-hour phone call that I was on, you know, just change can be really difficult. But I think that's one challenge that many pastors face, is looking out and going, "Whew, this is, we're going in two separate directions, or they're not going as fast as I need them to, or they want to go faster than I have energy for." So let's talk a little bit about that, a culture that either works against or is quite not in step with the lead pastor's vision? Anybody?
Well, I mean, I've experienced it as well. All these things, as we read these articles, we're like, yeah, this is kind of what, yeah, ditto, mood, to use a Gen Z phrase. Yeah. It's very, I think one of the great things that great leaders do is they build culture. And you can, now you're talking about a denomination. It's hard for a single lead pastor to build culture within his denomination, but you can. I mean, you can influence culture maybe. That takes time. That takes commitment. And yet, I think you have to know what that means. Maybe it would be worth maybe defining. How does it?
Right.
I mean, how can a culture influence your vision or restrict your vision? How does that happen?
Well, I would say this comes back to planning, right? And so being intentional or the strategy part of ministry, that if you're saying we're not in the same pace or we're not walking at the same speed, or it's working or they're working against each other, I would probably say there wasn't a strategic plan in place, because sometimes that provides the clarity around it. So if you say, well, hey, my church, it's budget, we're a couple months into the year now, but you're saying, hey, our church budget isn't doing what I thought it would, then I'd say, well, maybe if we're already off pace, maybe we didn't put the effort in on the front end, halfway through or in Q4 of 2023 to actually create a strategy around that. And so,
And that sounds like a culture issue too, a culture of planning and foresight.
Yeah. And just as a side here, you know, planning and strategy is not bad. You look at Nehemiah, you look at, I could give a number of examples, but planning and strategy in ministry is not awful. That doesn't mean that we won't be receptive to the Holy Spirit and where He's leading. That doesn't mean that we're not going to pivot because events or things happen. But strategy on its own, in intentional planning, is not a negative. So if you have a culture, though, that works against your vision, and maybe it's a staff member that is not aligned, maybe it is, like you said, the budget, the building, something else, then I think, how do you bring that up? I mean, that's what I'm struggling with, how do you not just internalize that and say, well, I guess I got to kill my vision, or they just don't see what I see.
Yeah. And I think, you know, when you have a staff and, you know, a congregation that always has opinions about stuff, it's throwing those opinions and stuff in there. My thought, I've always had this, because I hate change. I am one person.
You're a check the box type of guy.
I'm a check the box kind of guy. I don't deal well with change. And so one of the quotes that I have to live my life.
We don't know if it's notable.
And
yet.
It's a very like secular quote, but it's change is the only constant in the universe. And so that is, I know it could be kind of problematic of a quote, but it is something that I always have to constantly be thinking about. Like, hey, if you're not changing, if things aren't changing, nothing's moving. Nothing's moving forward. You know, things have to change to get better. And so, that's how I have to live my life, because I do not deal well with change.
Maybe a better ministry example is just about the Israelites as they were wandering around, you know, and God's providing the manna for them. They're like, well, this isn't McDonald's breakfast. This isn't something else that they're still complaining. And so at some point you could have people complaining just that the carpet is blue or that the sun is yellow. But I definitely sympathize, I guess, is what I'm trying to say, with that tension that we live in, that we say, hey, we don't quite have that. And so on the strategy side, I think it works better when you have conversations at some sort of cadence. And that's why I was talking about the budget. Hey, we know during October, November that we're on for next year's budget. And so what do we have to be doing before that budget so that we can plan accordingly? So you may look up Pastor and say, hey, we need to do, or we want to do raises, merit or market increases for our staff. But let's say it's merit, and let's say we want to give it based off of who's performing and not. Well, you may have to have those reviews done in October, right? September even, so that then you can build that into your 2024 budget. And this is where I feel like some people are just struggling here, is they're so far misaligned or so far separated from the strategy part of it, that then it begins to feel like it's working against your vision. When in most cases, I would say, Pastor, they trust you, they love you, they want you to lead them, and so lead into that.
Well, and I would also say, Pastor, leader, staff member, and this was a weakness I definitely had as a staff member, is that you have to communicate your goals, your vision, your values early and often. That those things need to be, you know, your finance chairman, if you have one of those, he needs to be really aware of your heart,
yeah,
for ministry and how you see that fleshing out in the actions of the church early and often. It can't be a surprise at budget time,
right,
to him, right, or her or them. They need to be in that fellowship of your vision.
No one likes surprises.
No.
Nope.
I'm chief among them. All right. Number one, exhaustion. Number two, a culture that works against the vision. Three is a structure that restricts growth. And so this could be the lid effect, I think. So as we're talking about the five challenges here, you know, that first one being exhaustion, the second one really being about a culture that works against the vision. You know, and our third point here is just a structure that restricts growth. You know, I think there's, instead of releasing it, I think there's really two parts of this. One is structure, but the part that hit home for me was restricting growth. You know, I was out trimming some of our whatever landscaping this weekend, and I was just thinking over and over about how pruning it will make it look better here in a couple months. Because right now it looks awful. I'll send you guys a picture. But I did a number on that. I hacked off probably too many limbs, but I know here in a couple weeks it's going to come back beautiful and all that. But
what is it again? What plant is it?
I don't know the name of it. It was a bush in my front yard.
It's probably a crepe myrtle.
It's a crepe myrtle. You can. I don't think you can really kill it.
I don't know. We'll see, but I did a number on it. But here we're talking about, you know, having some sort of system or structure that restricts growth. And we see this a lot in churches where they grow to a certain size. I mean, 200 is kind of a popular number. Where churches really, really struggle to break through that 200 mark. And oftentimes when they do, they go all the way up, you know, over 500. But that 250 barrier seems to be where most churches will plateau. And I think because they don't spend enough time purposely getting there, that they can't then go on to the next one. But guys, let's talk about restricting growth within a church and how either that's bad or how many lead pastors can at least feel the weight of that challenge.
Yeah, I would say you as a ministry leader, and I was not a lead pastor, but I restricted growth in my ministry because I was good enough at what I did that no one else felt like they could do what I did. And so anyone that came into the ministry, you know, I was the sort of stereotypical worship leader in those early days of praise and worship, where there's one guy that sings and plays guitar or sings and plays keyboard, the front man. And nobody else is going to do that. And within that role is all of this other stuff that other people could have done. But again, it was a structure that it was so hard to get out of that, to try and build other leaders in. So I was kind of that structure that restricted growth. I don't know I don't know.
I think you have to be really intentional, though, to move past that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? I mean, so when you're in the early stage or a smaller size church, like, you need that person who can do it all. And what happens is you hit that 150, 200, you have X amount of staff members. Everybody gets comfortable and they say, hey, I know how to do it. And yeah. In some sense, there's even if I doubt it would ever be explicitly said, but there's some underlying what's the word I'm looking for? Just like job security to be like, hey, yeah. I know how to do this, this, and this.
Absolutely.
They can't fire me. They won't run me off because I know how to do this. And I think in order to move past that, like you're saying, Phil, and not be the lid, you then have to train, develop,
yes,
make disciples, right? I mean, you have to have people that are actively replacing you that want to do it too.
Yeah. But I think in my experience, there was so much history with all the people that had been around that it really took, and this is my own failure, but it really took me leaving for that church to then grow beyond it. And ironically, my son stepped in and did what I had tried to do for the last 3 or 4 years. And, he was easily able to do that, partly because he came from a church where that's what they were doing. They were building leaders.
Yeah.
It was a team. Both my sons have done that so much better than I ever could, partly because that was the culture. The structure was already kind of in place. That's what they were expected to do, was build a team.
Well, and on that other side, though, you can be a part of a structure that is debilitating.
Yeah,
that is
true.
Restricting in not in a good way, that restricts growth. So you mentioned finance, having a relationship with like a finance committee or a finance chair, and they want to approve every single penny or every purchase over $5. Like at some point that is going to restrict growth. It's going to restrict attitudes and things like that. There has to be some level of trust.
Yeah.
And I think finding that balance can be really difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think whenever you're talking to Kyle about that pruning your branches and stuff like that, I pulled up John 15 where Jesus is speaking to his disciples about Jesus being the true vine. And in the chapter 2, he says, he cuts off every branch of mine that doesn't produce fruit. And he prunes the branches that do bear fruit so they will produce even more.
Right.
So what you were talking about.
Right. Like cutting, and how that fits in with structure, though, the structure of your church may be that every year we are cutting things and every year we're adding things. Hopefully, maybe we're cutting more than what we're adding. But a restructure. When was the last time that your staff grew so much that you had to have another set of personnel committee or a different set of raises? There's a number of these different things that I'm like, how often? And I think in the established church certainly like a liturgical church, but an established church that you've been around for 40, 50 years, it is really difficult to change. And I think it's important to say, hey, there's not a motive here of why we're going to cut out this committee. But that committee that meets twice a year is no longer working. So we are going to adapt and do this instead. What is that structure? I think I'll leave it up to you, but I definitely think there's technology that can be implemented here. And one of the other things, so if we look at exhaustion being, one point or our first point today, having scheduled sabbaticals, we've talked about this on past episodes, but forcing people off the stage at some sort of recurring interval will develop new leaders. So if you make your worship leader take off every fifth week, guess what? Someone else is going to know how to do that.
They'll have to step up.
Yeah. You'll burn through a couple. You may be like, yeah, they won't cut it. They won't cut it. But eventually you're going to find someone who you trust, who is there. And I think that makes everybody better. Our next point, our fourth point, out of five here today. And once again, we took this from an article that we found online, but they mentioned one thing that exhausts pastors is uncertainty around digital ministry. And then they had this footnote, including internal and external communications. Matt, we've talked a lot about internal, external communications. You give the announcements at the church that you're a staff on. But even that, and as much as you've tried to tweak that, obviously can still be better. But using digital ministry around that, I think, is one idea. And so they're talking about technology. We've talked about the text number, you know, Texas keyword.
One of the things that I try to include in all my announcements is that everything is on the app. Everything is on the app. Everything's in the digital frontier, you know. It's one of the things.
I just want my bulletin, though. I just want a paper thing that has the thing so I can put it on the fridge.
I mean, there is a bulletin in the hallway.
Can I steal it?
The church, I mean, sure. It's a monthly bulletin.
Frowned upon?
I mean, steal the church bulletin.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, there's a church bulletin in our church. So, I mean, you probably don't even know where it's at.
I probably don't. I bet it's in the bathroom, though.
No, it's not.
Okay. Well, yeah. So around this, and I think the thought process here is talking about technology and digital ministry, so social media, things like that. Phil, you'll probably want to weigh in here because I'm an old curmudgeon when it comes to this. You know, sometimes I do like a little like physical reminder of communications because maybe I showed up late to church. Maybe I was thinking about other things when the communications were made, or I just didn't put it in my calendar right away. Phil, you liked this point. This was your favorite point around digital ministry.
Yeah, I don't like paper, for one thing. So personally, you know, I'm the guy that when they're standing at the door handing out the whatever it is,
I just say no thank you.
I say no thank you.
Hey, do you get your receipt?
Please don't give me paper.
When you go to Whataburger?
No, I drive past. They say, go to the first window. I go to the second window.
Okay.
And I love the
Carl's
ones.
Carl's Jr. has two windows?
I don't do Carl's Jr. I eat Carl's Jr. about twice a year.
I'm sorry.
McDonald's a lot, sadly. But so, yeah, who's dinging?
That was me.
Thanks. Thanks for speaking technology, of digital communication.
You know.
I don't know if they hear that. We hear that in our headphones. Yeah. I don't know if that will record or not. I'm always surprised when those things don't come through. So what were we talking about, Kyle?
You were talking about
Carl's Jr.?
No. Uncertainty around digital ministry.
Well,
communications.
Yeah, I would say
you like the hard physical copy.
No, I do not like a physical hard copy of things. In fact, when I was a media director, when we introduced our digital bulletin, I went to great pains to design I designed a QR code that had a logo in it. I ordered stickers, put them all over the backs of the pews so people could scan the QR codes to get the digital bulletin. I developed a whole system of getting all the information from the physical bulletin into the digital bulletin on a weekly basis, created a whole process, and we went without a physical bulletin for one solid week.
Brutal.
Yeah, because one of the most long-standing and really a wonderful guy, long-standing members, not older guy, obviously, was like, There better be a physical bulletin next week, yeah. I think that's one of those things. It's just a part of his worship experiences, right? Having that bulletin, having the names of the songs. He goes back during the week and he looks at it. Oh, this song or this scripture or this, you know, he's got his sermon notes, whatever it happens to be. I'm like, yeah, it's a valid thing. But yeah, I'm all about the digital. I probably really digress there. We're not really talking about.
No, you make your notes on it. You put it in that specific chapter in your Bible.
Like, yeah, there's
something
exactly
nice
yeah.
about it.
Or
here,
you save
I've
those
got an idea
for memory.
It's going to combine two of these.
Okay.
So QR code, church leader, if you're listening to this, QR generator, I think, but you can find other ones. They can link to a web page or even, Matt, an announcement video that we record with this week or this month's announcements. I'm just throwing this out there.
Yeah.
But here's the missing part is, Phil, I want them magnetized. I want a magnet that says my church announcements with a QR code that I can stick on my fridge. So when I don't remember Absolutely. The date of it, I can just...
Not a problem at all.
I can scan it on the fridge and it just pulls up.
Anytime you want, you That's can see this week's announcement. That's a great idea.
It's the best of both worlds. That's so it can great. Still be digital or however you prefer, but I need that reminder because I'm going to go, well, do I open up Facebook? Do I open up the church webpage? Do I text someone, which is what happens, and say, hey, what time does this start?
And I think, Kyle, what you're doing is you're creating or you're stating something that really comes to the heart of this issue of uncertainty around digital media and digital ministry, and that is that churches have to get better at it and continue to grow in it because it's just a fact of life. It's how people communicate. It's a really efficient way to communicate. So you have to do what you just did, and that is let's figure out how it can work best and better and continually better. You have to be attentive to it. That's my two cents on...
Boom. There it is. Matt had a notable quotable. I give you your actionable takeaway.
I'm not writing a jingle.
No, that's a hard jingle one. But hey, get a magnet with your church. Says my church announcements. Put a QR code on it. Say, hey, so that you guys don't have to text the pastor and say, what time does this start?
Yeah.
Slap it on the fridge and then you can just scan it. That's...
Dude, that is genius.
Yeah,
really?
That's a good idea.
You're not just hyping me up?
No, I literally just sent it in our staff page.
Oh, I love it. Oh, makes me feel better. All right, and hey, let us know if that worked for you. Text me 405-343-8700. If somehow your church does that TM, the church announcement magnet. All right. Hey, the last one we're here talking about today, the challenges facing lead pastors. And this is about training and releasing new leaders. I'm not sure which one is the more difficult here when we're talking about new leaders, whether it's the training, the development, or the releasing. But I think bringing people up and then sending them out can be a challenge for for any pastor. And maybe the third action here, I would say, is just identifying. Hey, this person is a leader. So identifying, training, and releasing. Out of those three, which one do you guys think is the most difficult for pastors?
Releasing. If you have a good leader, to me.
Releasing them to another ministry,
to another church, where whatever it is, wherever they've been called to next. I think that's the hardest one. Again, back to my statement, I don't like change, but yeah, I think when you have a good leader and they've been called somewhere else, and so
releasing them to their next assignment.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's not that hard. Sometimes you just want to.
No. Release. If it's a good leader, it's hard. Okay. It's hard.
That's true. If they're quality, releasing is probably the hardest part. Yeah.
I would piggyback on that and say releasing them to actually do the ministry in the church sometimes is difficult because, you know, if you're the kind of guy that likes to have his hands on everything, has an idea of what everything should be like, and especially a lot of guys that start churches might tend to be that kind of personality, which is one of the reasons they felt comfortable starting a church, because they could sort of visualize all these pieces coming together.
Right.
You got to let that person do the thing. And I think that could be a challenge for head pastors. I think I've seen that as well. Would you not agree?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
I think that is a challenge. What I was going to pick was just the identification. Because what, you know, before we can release, before we can build them up, train them, all that other stuff, that we have to identify what their best fit is. And so I think sometimes we look at it and say, hey, they would be a great community group leader, when in fact they may be a very good leader, just not a very good community group leader. And so we have to identify other areas for them to serve the church because they failed at that one. That was just a personal, that was out of my diary over here that I had written down. So identifying, I would actually maybe argue and identifying correctly where they can serve. That would be the one that I would hit on, but
Yeah, well, I think it's tough, and I think it's a specific gift that people have. I've known people that, man, you are so good at seeing. I'm thinking of a specific person that I know who is just so good at seeing what a person could do. And I was in ministry with this guy, and he said, "Hey, I'm going to send this guy to you because he would be." I'm like, "Are you joking me?" And lo and behold, it was the perfect fit. Mm. So, yeah.
And I actually think that's a great way to land this, or a great place to land this, Phil, is as you're talking about different roles. And frankly, even several of these things that we've talked about, you cannot do it all, Pastor. you need Amen. The other people to, so you may be very good at developing them, but you may not be very good at identifying leaders. I can almost guarantee you that the people who can identify and develop also are not very good at releasing. And so this is why we're better together. But if you look at like the structure that we were talking about, really people that enjoy building structures, they may not be the right person for this other part of the ministry. And so if those five things that we talked about, if Pastor, you're like, yes, I can do all of those five things and these 18 subpoints, realize that is not true. And so one of the challenges that you face is having people around you that can also execute on your vision.
Amen.
All right. So to recap, the five challenges facing lead pastors today, exhaustion, number one. Matt, what was your notable quotable there?
You're not training for the race. You're training to recover from the race.
You got to have something left for your family, for your life. That's good.
I still like it. Culture, number two, a culture that works against the vision. And so this is talking about alignment and strategy. Number three, a structure that restricts growth instead of releasing it. Phil's talking about really just the lid of an organization, and don't be someone who holds back the progress of the church. Then I also think we talk about uncertainty around digital ministry, how we communicate internally and externally. Our first takeaway free tidbit was the digital magnet announcement, QR code, TM, whatever we're going to call that thing, to stick on the fridge for your announcements. And then finally is just identifying, training, and releasing new leaders into your church. What did we miss? Anybody? We wanted to hit on five. Matt, Phil, did we miss one? Is there something that we should hit on other than the fact that, Pastor, you can't do it all? So if these are your challenges, please understand that you're also not the doctor to yourself. And sometimes it takes, if you're feeling burned out, it takes professional help. It takes someone else to see it or call it out or call you up. But anything else, I mean, I'm sure we could find 115 challenges most pastors face.
I would just say, if I have an encouragement for pastors, people in ministry, it is have community around you that you can trust. Not necessarily from within your church body. And I know that's a little funny, but I just think that's healthy to have a balance of people in your life that are not necessarily associated with your church body.
Yeah.
Not under you as their pastor.
Yeah. Just a reminder that, you know, your first ministry is at home. So I would say that, you know, that your first ministry is at your house, you know, with your family, you know, family first, man.
I don't know why Matt's winking at me. Hey, let's start the music, Phil. It's got really, really awkward over here. Other than, I don't know what he was trying to.
Well, no, I don't even know. Hey, I didn't even know winked.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of the Thriving in Ministry podcast, as we talked about five challenges facing lead pastors today. Hey, we appreciate your time. If you've made it this far, we just want to encourage you. Join us each and every week as we talk to pastors, church leaders, church staff, because we want to create margin for ministry. We love you guys. Stay in the fight.
Stay in the fight.
Always.